The History Mythology Podcast. Hello, faithful mythologists. Today, we'll be straying away from Doja in the Old Kingdom period and taking a look at Akhenaten in the New Kingdom period. Now, just a very quick message before we begin. This is going to be a less structured, less scripted episode, hopefully, and if I make a few stuff-ups along the way, so be it. Let's get straight into today's episode. We'll be focusing on Akhenaten as a person and what he tried to introduce to Egypt in the New Kingdom period under his reign. Before and after he was named Amenhotep IV, and yeah, we'll just be honing in on that. So Akhenaten was most likely what you know him as, is the father of Tutankhamun and the husband of Queen Nefertiti. But in actuality, his biggest contribution or letdown to society and to the Egyptian civilization as it is, was him trying to radicalize and transform Egypt in a way by ditching the Kemetian Egyptian gods and replacing them by what is renowned as the first monotheistic god, Aton, who had a cult worship that Akhenaten actually befell into. Now, as per ancient education, Akhenaten changed his devotion from the cult of Amun to that of Aton, and, for the next 12 years, became famous, or infamous, as the heretic king, who abolished the traditional religious rites of Egypt and instituted the first known monotheistic state religion in the world and, according to some, monotheism itself. Now, it is a controversial topic in which people debate the fact that Akhenaten introduced the first monotheistic god to a prosperous civilization. There is evidence of prior monotheistic gods, but as far as we are concerned, this was the first known monotheistic entity and divine being worshipped by a mass. Akhenaten's reign is also known as the Amarna period because he moved the capital of Egypt from its traditional site at Thebes to Akhetaten, which was named after the god, which also became known as Amarna. It sometimes is pronounced Tel Amarna. The Amarna period is actually the most controversial era in all of Egyptian history and has been widely written about by scholars more than any other period that we know of today. Now, Amenhotep IV becomes Akhenaten for a variety of reasons, but the one that we know is certain is that he fell into that cult worship and tried to introduce religious reforms that ultimately resulted in his being despised as the heretic king. His name was changed to worship the god, because as we know, pharaoh's kings at the time had the name Amun, or something holy like Hotep, to worship the Egyptian pantheon and really prove they had this divine authority and revelation over everybody else. Now, what really caused Aton to come or rise to prominence in Egypt at the time was linked to the standing of society itself. So, his father, Amenhotep III, ruled over a land whose priesthood, widely founded on the god Amun, as many parts of the land were, had been very much steadily growing in power for hundreds of years. By the time he came to Akhenaten himself came to power, the priests of Amun were on almost equal standing with the royal house in both wealth and influence. Lewis Spence writes, "With the exception of Ra and Osiris, the worship of Amun was more widespread than that of any other god in the Nile Valley, but the circumstances behind the growth of his cult certainly point to its having been disseminated by political rather than religious propaganda." Now, by the time of Amenhotep IV, the cult of Amun owned more land than the king. In the fifth year of his reign, Amunhotep IV outlawed the old Egyptian religion and proclaimed himself the living incarnation of a single all-powerful deity known as Aton. And by the ninth year, he had closed all the temples and suppressed religious practices. Ancient EDU states that some historians have praised Akhaton's performance as the first instance of monotheism and the benefits of monotheistic belief, but these reforms were not at all beneficial to the people of Egypt at the time. The historian Durant, for example, writes that Akhaton's reforms were the first outstanding expression of monotheism, 700 years before Isaiah of the Bible, and an astounding advance upon the old tribal deities. Those old tribal deities of Egypt, however, had encouraged peace, harmony, and the development of one of the greatest ancient cultures the world has ever known. Akhenaten himself did have a stele that really told of his attempted proclamation of power, and although it didn't really work out for him, we still owe it to him for the first introduction of monotheism, and for all we know, it could have had an impact on the three monotheistic faiths that we revel and know today. The only problem with his reign was he pushed it on people and tried to erase and rewrite Egyptian history in his favor, and that's why he went down as a heretic king. As soon as he died, everybody, including his wife and son and many daughters, all turned on him and basically had a laugh at his so-called legacy, because the path that he had tread was so egocentric and very personalized that nobody else around him either cared or bothered to care or wanted to succumb to his indignity, in a way. The polytheism of the ancient Egyptians also encouraged a worldview where peace and balance were institutionalized, and religious tolerance was considered a non-issue. There is not even a word directly corresponding to the concept of religious tolerance in the ancient Egyptian text. Ancient EU says, a hallmark of any monotheistic belief system, however, is that it encourages the belief that in order for it to be right, other systems must necessarily be wrong. And Akhenaten completely went over this. His claims were just purely intentionalized towards him. They had no care or bother for the people around him, for the polytheism that had really fueled the fire of ancient Egyptian civilization for so long. And it was really, his reign in general, a disgrace to the pharaohs themselves. Moving the city of Thebes to a new one under your name, as you claim yourself, Aton, is very much a wrongdoing. And he wasn't only called the heretic king, he was mocked, spat on at the streets. We have evidence that he may have been publicly embarrassed, which may have resulted in many deaths, as we know the pharaoh had total military power as well. And his reign in general was really just this stain on the Egyptian legacy. It's very much a good case, however, that he was not the last pharaoh, and although his son, Tutankhamun, took over when he was 17 years of age, the person who really had an influence over Egypt this whole period was his wife, Queen Nefertiti. Nefertiti was a popular face among the citizens of Egypt at the time. She had the adoration of the people, and her ways, although she didn't hold much power, she was very much the face of the people themselves. She had their hearts in mind and wasn't trying to push this cult god onto everybody else, one that completely disregarded the many years of tradition, many centuries, thousands of years worth of tradition that the Egyptians had built up over time. Now, Akhenaten also neglected Egypt's allies. At the time, the pharaoh was a servant of the gods and identified with a certain god, which was more often than not Horus or Ra. This was also common practice in ancient Egyptian culture itself, but no one before Akhenaten had proclaimed himself an actual god incarnate. As a god, he seems to have felt that the affairs of the state were beneath him and that he was a powerful mighty being that held all authority over the people around him. This had many unfortunate results, many unfortunate consequences for Egyptian society, but none more than Akhetaten himself suffered from this. And that is the truly laughable clause of this entire thing. It's very much a joke in some respects. Scholars laugh at this, use this as an example of poor reign, and his neglection of foreign policy and the gods themselves is just anti-prosperous to such an extent that from documents and letters of the time, it is known that other nations and formerly allies wrote numerous times asking for help, and in the face of him being a god, these were turned down. This was a hilarious feat. It very much ditched diplomacy and military action and just forged this new path that would ultimately lead to Akhetaten's demise and no one else's. We know that Egyptian society has had a history of bad rulers and it was able to bounce back from that, spring back from it. But this was truly a laughable dynasty or period legacy. Now this part is directly pulled from ancient EU. The Amarna letters, correspondence found in the city of Amarna between kings of Egypt and those of foreign nations, provide evidence of Akhetaten's negligence. Also show him to have had a keen sense of foreign policy when the situation interested him and a variety of other things. So while not he was a very poor ruler, he also strongly rebuked a certain part of the nation for his actions against another and for his friendship with the Hittites, who were at the time Egypt's enemy. This was a controversial thing, but it seemed to work at the time, although it would have later consequences. It did really build the foundations of future time periods, and Egypt remained prosperous for quite some time. However, it had no doubt more to do with his desire to keep friendly the buffer states between Egypt and the land of the Hatti, which would later become Canaan and Syria, which were under Abedashirta's influence. That's another thing for another time. This had no sense of justice, and the death of one of his close, one of his allies, and the taking of a place called Byblos, it really just, he had a lot of misdoings in the geographical and warring sense, and this just added to his frowning upon in public society. There is no doubt that his attention to this problem served the interests of the state, but as other similar issues were ignored, it really just seems that he only chose the situations which concerned him alone. Akhenaten and Abedashirta brought to Egypt and were brought to Egypt and imprisoned for a year until the Hittite advances in the north compelled his release. But there seems to be a marked difference between the letters dealing with the situation and other kings' correspondence on similar topics. So that attempt to gain influence over the Hittites really didn't work out for him. It was another quite laughable sector of his reign. While there are then examples of him looking after state affairs, there are more which substantiate the claim of his disregard for anything other than his religious reforms and life in the palace. Ancient EU says it should be noted, however, that this is a point hotly debated among scholars, as is the whole of the so-called Amarna period of Akhetaten's rule. The later decree, as well as archaeological indications, strongly suggest that Akhenaten was a very poor ruler as far as his subjects and vassal states were concerned, and his reign, in the words of Hawass, was an inward-focused regime that had lost interest in his foreign policy. Any evidence that he involved himself in matters outside of the city of Akhetaten always comes back to self-interest rather than state interest. Now, as a general consensus, Akhenaten was a terrible ruler. He tried to introduce something that would prove detrimental to the Egyptian society at the time, but more colloquially, in a way, detrimental to himself as a ruler. He tried to destroy every hieroglyph he could get his hands on, replace arts with things of his own, as in Akhetaten paintings and inscriptions. He tried to replace temples with tales of Aten's wrath and might, and really glorify that image that he had praised as himself, in a god incarnate. And When we look back at this time, we notice that it does have some beneficiaries to the actual civilization itself. Not only was this a very laughable period in time, but it also paved the way for future pharaohs to learn from Akhenaten's mistakes. Although his name was very much phased out from the book, from the city of the Valley of the Kings in Thebes, he was remembered as the greatest mistake to never live up to. Pharaohs in the future learnt from his wrongdoings and his attempts to radicalize or change, transform the civilization, and use this to bolster their power and authority over Upper and Lower Egypt, and very much form their dynasty, their legacy, in a more safe and advancing way, in a way that didn't propose anything personally endowed or anything that hindered Egypt in a way that forced it into exile, lowered its political standing across the known realm. It was just very much a way of learning the ropes for future pharaohs and teaching Egypt not to take power so seriously, although in later dynasties it would come to be that power meant everything, that economy meant everything. But at this time, everyone was still having a good old laugh at Akhenaten's failures. Of course, some were still very much distraught by the fact that he destroyed a lot of temples and hieroglyphs, and that his royal decrees were treason to many people. But in the overarching sense, this was a mockery period of some sort. Now, I'd just like to say that this isn't where I saw this episode going. I wanted this to be more formal, intuitive, and to really be centered in and honed in on this topic. I did structure it a tiny bit, but I have left this quite open, and I just want to say that if you want this more of this type of content, more loose, very much more loose, and derivative of a few sources only, then please by all means let me know on Instagram or anywhere else that you can somehow find me. I will certainly be thinking of making a YouTube channel soon, but as for now, I'm just trying to myself learn the ropes of Spotify, just like Egypt did with. As always, share this with a friend. Please leave your feedback on Instagram. I will be making a new season after we're done with this Egyptian stuff. It'll be on classical antiquity, epic Greece, and yeah. I appreciate you sticking around for this episode. The next one, I'm still conjuring topics for, but I feel like it will be a much more interesting, engaging topic that will have you on edge at every moment. History Mythologies podcast series is an ode to all things history. Although amateur, it aims to answer some unanswered questions and also get you interested in a wide variety and array of topics, interesting and non-interesting, because everything in history is history.